Okay. For those in the room, disclosures are available at the registration desk. And also, just as a housekeeping note, for those of you sitting around the table, you can indicate that you have a question by pushing the button on your microphone, and I'll work to get your questions during the time that we have this afternoon. As we invite those on the webcast to join us, good afternoon. I'm Mike Rollins, telecom analyst at Citi, and we're continuing our IMT conference by moving north into Canada. And I'd like to welcome BCE's Chief Financial Officer, Glen LeBlanc. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having us. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, maybe just to kick us off, you know, as we're beginning the new year, clearly a busy year for you in 2015, but maybe you can give us a glimpse into the strategic and operating priorities for 2016.
Sure, I'd be happy to, Mike. When I look out to 2016, I think you'll see a lot of similarities to that of 2015, and let's look at it by each line of business. When we think about wireless, we had a very, very good 15, with strong revenue growth, as we indicate, as you've seen in our third quarter results, 8.3% revenue, 8.3% EBITDA, and tremendous ARPU growth, one of our best quarters ever at 6.1%. But when we look out to 2016, I think it's suffice to say you're not going to deliver ARPU of that level each quarter, but we still see healthy ARPU growth in 2016 and strong wireless performance. When we think about our wireless business, 98% of our customers now have access to our LTE network. But next year, we'll move to about 75% having access to LTE Advanced through dual band and tri-band carrier aggregation. So that which is quite remarkable, the speeds that we're seeing there on tri-band, seeing 335 megabit speeds. So continuing to invest in our network and maintaining our network leadership position in the wireless space, healthy growth, I think, from a share perspective, taking our fair share of the market while enjoying what's more than our fair share of the industry EBITDA, and I certainly like to see that continuing. And as I mentioned, strong ARPU growth continuing. You know, one of the drivers from the ARPU growth that we are experiencing is when customers convert from the HSPA to the LTE network. And finishing third quarter, about 63% of our customers were operating on the LTE network. But when a customer moves from the HSPA to LTE, we get about a 50% bump in data consumption and usage. So about 1 gig average moving to 1.5. And monetizing that data growth is really one of the main drivers of the ARPU. Flipping over to 2016 and talk a little bit about our wireline business. Wireline is really about fiber, and it's advancing our fiber footprint. We have about 2.2 million customers today that have access to our fiber to the home network. And if you think about our 10 million households that we have, ultimately, I don't know what year it is, whether it's 10 years, but let's say approximately in a decade, we'd like to see 90% of those homes having access to fiber. So that means expanding and continuing to invest heavily in the expansion of fiber and bringing that closer to that ultimate objective of 90%. This year, or last year, we announced that we were going to complete Toronto, about 1.1 million homes with 1 gig fiber, and we'll do that. That'll be, for all intents and purposes, mostly completed by around the end of 17. So fiber is the focus, no doubt about it, in the wireline business. Is to continue to drive fiber. Now, it's important to note that we always say driving fiber inside of the responsible CapEx envelope, and we think we can do that inside of 17% intensity. We've done that historically. You know, if you think about reaching 8 to 9 million homes ultimately with fiber, we're a quarter of the way there, and we've done it inside of a spending envelope equivalent to that. So we're going to pass it at an appropriate pace, but inside a responsible CapEx envelope. So absolutely believe we can do that. And then over on our media business, it's been, the media business has been challenged. The advertising market certainly has been under some fire, but very, very pleased about how our team has done. And I think we're punching outside of our weight class there on the advertising side. Rising content cost is certainly not new to you, Michael. You know that's been part of the business and something that we've had to endure. And in doing so, I think it's appropriate to be a little proactive, and we've taken some actions to right-size the cost structure. This isn't new to BCE. We know in the wireline business for many, many years, having to be proactive and be out in front of right-sizing the cost structure when you see revenue and business challenges in front of you, and that's exactly what we did in fourth quarter. I'll discuss that more in our fourth quarter analyst call. I'll give you a bit more detail, but right-sizing the cost structure, and for me, that's important, and just tremendous work that our leadership team has done over in the media business to accomplish that, ultimately with the objective that I think is a fair and reasonable one, that our media business it's a great cash flow generator for us. It's a low capital intense business, so it allows us to take that cash flow and invest it elsewhere, like fiber. But it can't be a year over year EBITDA or cash flow drain. So very important that that business find itself a way to neutral or slightly positive. And I'm very confident that the management team there can see its way to that. So that's a little bit of a look out to the future, but I think there'll be no surprises that the strategic imperatives that BC had in 15 will exist in 16.
So if you could just take a couple of minutes and maybe help us understand the ability for your company to leverage the collection of assets that you have to try to produce better growth than the industry. And maybe there's a couple of examples of things that maybe work and some things that don't work as you creatively think about bundles or exclusive tie-ins, things of that nature, as you're trying to leverage the collection of assets that you have.
Yeah, I think BC has a tremendous collection of assets, and we're very pleased with them, the vertically integrated strategy we have. And when you think about our media assets and the way we've been able to leverage those media assets to ensure better performance in our TV business, you know, some of the changes that's recently occurred in the regulatory front have actually allowed us to change our thought and how we utilize some of our media assets. And an example of that is Crave TV, which is our over-the-top on-demand TV product, which at one time was offered exclusively through distribution through the BDUs. But this month, we're going to take that asset and we're going to take it over the top. And changes in the regulatory environment allow us to do that now. And also, if we do offer the product over the top, it allows us to exclusively offer that content to just our Bell TV, if we so desire. Now, we haven't gone there yet, but you can see the leverage and the value in having that. We have now exclusive rights to HBO Canada for well into the next decade, exclusive rights to Showtime in Canada, and having content, like in a great example, is Game of Thrones, a show that just has tremendous viewer audience. We could actually take that and deliver it exclusively to Bell customers if we wanted to, albeit we would also have to offer it via our over-the-top product. So leveraging the content that we have in Bell, utilizing the relationship with Bell TV to ensure the health and the profitability of our Bell TV business and having some access to some of this exclusive content can happen. I think overall the assets we have really leveraging the vertical integrated strategy quite well.
Do you believe in the quad play, and what kind of experience are you seeing in your markets in the interest for customers to buy up all of the services from a single provider?
Well, that's a good question. The quad play has been something we've been talking about in this industry for years and years and years. And I think a number of years ago, it was difficult to see the churn benefit from the quad play. And I think inside the household, it truly became a separate buying decision, where you made your wireless decision maybe as a group family plan, and you bought two or three cell phones for your family. But your home wired decision, your video, your broadband decision, and in turn voice with that, became a different buying decision. But I do believe that the delineation point, or the black line between wireless and wireline, is starting to get thinner, and together wireless and wireline are coming more and more together as a kind of a seamless two products. And a great example is an experience that we are having now with our product suite in the home. We've just launched a product called, it's a Fibe TV app that you can put on any of your mobile devices, whether it be your iPad or your smartphone. And it turns every device into the home into a TV. And you can watch any of the linear TV program we deliver into your home over Bell TE on any device in the home. It only has to be authenticated once. So you only authenticate it the very first time, and now it turns them all. And when you leave the home and with your mobile device, you can watch some of that content over our mobile network. But you start to see how wireline and wireless and the Wi-Fi in the home and the way we utilize our products is starting to be more of a shared and a together experience. So I think with that in mind, I could see that the quad play can have a potentially more valuable marketing angle to it into the future.
If we move into the competitive landscape, any progress that you've seen in the fourth quarter in terms of what the competitive landscape looked like promotionally and how investors should think about, just in broad terms, the ability to execute in that market?
I would say we have not seen much change in the competitive landscape. It remains very, very competitive. In Canada, the fourth quarter is an interesting one in that you have a couple of events that occur in the fourth quarter. You have Black Friday that occurs. You have Boxing Day, where you start to see promotional activity ramp a little bit on those days. So we did see that, certainly seen that, and I think when everyone reports for their fourth quarter, you'll probably see a little bit of an elevated cost of acquisition or customer retention spend, a bit more marketing spend that occurred in this quarter. And that is, again, a product of those two days I mentioned, but also a bit of the double cohort that continues to exist in Canada with the expiration of three-year contracts and two-year contracts all occurring in this one calendar year. So I would say very competitive, but incredibly pleased with how we're performing.
So, when you think of what you've done with Crave TV, the ability to manage even some proprietary content availability for a period of time on that platform, does that provide you with an opportunity to focus a little bit less on price or significantly less on price to try to get share and retain customers because you can give them something that maybe they can't get on other networks?
Referring in particular to our wireless pricing?
Yes, for your wireless bundle, exactly, by being able to maybe give them Crave on the mobile devices or even in their home, just a bundled deal.
Well, I think the point I'll go back to is the health of our ARPU growth. I mean, we've been able to lead the marketplace in Canada for a number of quarters here in a row with ARPU growth. We have very, very healthy EBITDA growth. And we're certainly not suffering in our market share take because we're getting our fair share of the market. So I guess that's the perfect hat trick, isn't it? To use a Canadian hockey term, here in Vegas. But it's the perfect hat trick. So I don't see a need. If you're struggling to get the net adds, and you're very reluctant to be too price aggressive. Yeah, throwing in things to help with the growth, get your net adds up and your gross adds up, is a tool. It's a tool that I think in our toolbox we haven't had to use. It's certainly with the innovative and creative products like we have at Crave, Never Say Never, it's a product that we could introduce. But at this point, the team is executing so flawlessly in the manner they're doing it with, as I say, executing on the hat trick. Keep it going.
What's your reaction to Shaw buying Wind?
Yeah, it was for myself. It was a bit of a surprise, and I would say clearly, not the ideal outcome. I think I would have envisioned one day the exit strategy for private equity may have been a divestiture to one of the incumbents in Canada, and I think that probably was the outcome that we most desired. That said, this is better than a divestiture to a U.S. carrier coming into Canada. When I think about what Shaw is trying to do, Michael, you mentioned the quad play. Obviously, it's an area they feel they are required to focus to be competitive in their footprint, is to have a quad play offering if you're going to be in this business. So that allows them to have that. Now, of course, that has minimal implication to us in that area or that footprint. Another telco will have to deal with those challenges. And a quad play is not new to us in our market because we've had it in Quebec for many years with Videotron, and we've had it in Atlantic Canada for many years as well. But it is new, and something we haven't seen is a cable having a quad play offering in the West. Shaw purchasing it certainly will have some implications to us. We're the lowest market share out west as well. Of the three large incumbents, or we're last into that market, so naturally our market share is a little bit lower. But I also think their comments around being price disciplined is important. I don't think they're going to be a price disruptor. You can't make money in that business at $40 ARPUs, so I think they're going to have to be a migration to a price point that allows for profitability. The business is going to require heavy investment. You know, I spoke earlier about our LTE network and just our network superiority and what we've done with LTE and where we're going with LTE Advanced. Well, they have to build an LTE network. And while they're doing that, we're building an LTE Advanced network. I mentioned the competitive products that we have in there now, like the Category 9 devices that Samsung has one now that can utilize the tri-band. We're not standing still. We're continuing to evolve our network leadership position. So I think for Shaw, they have a formidable challenge ahead of them, one that I'm sure is not news to them. It's heavy investment period as they build out LTE. You can't build out LTE, without being a bit price disciplined and respective of the ARPU they're going to need to earn. But for us, at the end of the day, that's one competitor replacing another, and BC has never really shied away from competing. So.
When you go to your strategic whiteboard, does it make you want to act differently now in those regions, whether it's, you know, try to bring a over-the-top video product more aggressively into that region to have a bundle, or do something different that you're not doing today to get in front of their investment phase, to try to bring that network to LTE?
I think it's a little too early for us to answer that, to see how they're going to play this out and what type of competitor they're going to be. It goes back full circle to your earlier question about our suite of assets and ability to leverage them. We're very comfortable with the vertical integrated strategy we have and the assets we have because of those type of options that we have in front of us. And if we need to, we can do stuff like that.
So if we flip over to the wireline side of the business, you've drawn a different line in the sand than some of the U.S. companies where you described you want to be 90% or greater fiber to the home in a certain number of years. What contributed to getting to that conclusion that ultimately that's, where you have to skate to continue a hockey analogy? And talk a little bit about, what you see as maybe the incremental share opportunity as you try to create some broadband leadership in your markets?
Well, for us, fiber is truly a no-brainer. We have experience. We're not new to this. We have markets that are 5 years old in fiber, and we've seen the experience of how we can compete in fiber. We're taking where we have fiber, we're taking video share, we're winning the broadband. I mean, that's important to recognize the difference between some differences between Canada and the U.S. In the U.S., the vast majority of internet ads in any given quarter are being taken by cable. And I would say in some quarters it's more than the vast majority, it's greater than 100%. In Canada, we are consistently winning each quarter on internet ads, the telcos. Matter of fact, for six consecutive quarters, our net ads is greater than all of our cable companies' competitors combined. So we're winning the internet market share battle, if you will. So having fiber allows us to have a victory or a win by taking video. We have a superior TV offering. We're able to offer a superior internet experience. And so for us, and then we have 5 years history to look back into the markets where we've done fiber and we've taken substantive market share. And both video and internet, we've seen lower cost of operating in those markets. We see lower customer churn. We see higher customer and whole home ARPU. And for me, I've never been more convinced that the fiber strategy we're embarking upon has all of the evidence we need. And for me, I just wish you'd just love to go faster. I'd love to wait. I can't wait to be here when we're done at 90% because that's going to create a network that will give us competitive advantages for many, many years.
Is it just time and labor and I think you've mentioned before about all the approvals you need at the municipality level to get this done. Is that the long pole in the tent, or is it also a capital allocation decision and trying to just spread this over a multi-year period of time?
No, it's more the former than it is the latter. I certainly don't feel for a moment that we're cash or capital constrained. Let's put it into perspective. We spend $3.6 or $3.7 billion a year in our capital program. If we're passing on average 750 to a million homes even in any given year, that's at $1,000 a home passed, roughly 750 to $1 billion. So you can see how that can fit into the capital program. And if you want it to be incredibly aggressive or belligerent with your capital program, you could probably direct even more of that to fiber, of that 3.7. It's more of the former challenges that you have. It's a big undertaking to go into communities and do the necessary work we need with the municipalities, get the hydro, the pole agreements we need with the hydro companies. Ideally, we want to do as much aerial as we can, but there's still communities that warrant and require dig, and some buried, so you have to do digging. So our network and engineering team are running pretty hot, and we love it, because the faster they can go, I think the healthier our business is.
Can you talk about the decision to issue some equity during the fourth quarter? You know, what contributed to your capital allocation decision with that, and how should investors think about the way that you want to fund your business model over the coming few years?
Yeah, I think we surprised a few people on issuing equity. I guess when you haven't done it since 2002, no one's expecting you to do it anytime soon, but I'll answer the last part of your question, which leads into why we did this, and that is capital allocation in our business. And the easiest way to me to explain this or articulate this is how I view things as a three-legged stool in our business. We know who our investors are. Our investors look to BCE for a predictable, dependable, and reliable dividend. Our dividend growth model, it speaks for itself. We've had 78% increase in the dividend since 2008, and we know that's what our investors expect of us. Yield-orientated investors look to BCE for that, and we certainly haven't disappointed. But I think it's absolutely paramount that you do that, but not on the back of the balance sheet. And what I mean by that is inside a responsible payout ratio of 65 to 75%, which we have consistently delivered on, and again, will into the future. But you also can't deliver on a dividend growth model on the back of a CapEx program. Any telco over my career that I've seen with 11 to 13% capital intensity, I will tell you, will be in trouble in very short order, because the business warrants investment and it requires investment, whether that be the LTE network I alluded to or the building of the fiber network. I think it can be done inside a responsible level, as I mentioned, a 17%. But you can't cut that. But then the final point is, in the third leg of the stool, I guess, is having a responsible credit balance sheet and being committed to your investment-grade credit rating. And BCE has always said we would be. 175 to 225 is our stated range, leverage range, and we've been outside that for a number of years, driven by a host of reasons, but from our acquisitions to accelerated spectrum auctions that had us outlay cash considerably sooner than we had envisioned. Pension deficits, I keep predicting a rising interest rate environment that will eliminate that, but I've been wrong for five consecutive years, so I'll stop predicting. So that has us outside of that range, and I think it's important to demonstrate a turn of the trajectory and a commitment to get back inside of that range. Our sector has seen quite a bit of noise as of late, of negative watch, some downgrades, and I don't think that's a good place for BCE to be. Let's put it in perspective. The equity issuance we did is about 1.5% of our market cap, but it still was demonstrative of a company that's committed to investment grade credit. We're committed to the ratings we have. It allows us to access commercial paper in Canada, and frankly, look at the debt we've been raising at. We just did an MTN in the fall. It was the lowest coupon ever done at BCE, and that's in part by being committed to the leverage we are at. So, long answer, but it explains the way we view capital structure, and quite frankly, once we explain that to our investors, most people have been very, very accepting, and certainly our other stakeholders like bondholders are happy.
You mentioned spectrum is part of the reasons for the change in leverage relative to your target. And I'm curious how you think about using your spectrum for your customers in terms of trying to differentiate services versus maybe what some of the mobile carriers in the U.S. are doing. You know, for example, you have a lot of spectrum. You have less customers. So, and you mentioned going from LTE to LTE Advanced. So presumably that suggests that you could offer customers more bandwidth or more intensive usage of that bandwidth than maybe what they could do in the U.S. or some other countries. You know, how do you think about that in terms of the product offering and opportunities for you to grow your ARPU or grow your addressable market by maybe even going after some sort of fixed services over time?
Well, I think I touched on that already with the efforts that we're going through with carrier aggregation and putting the spectrum bands together to be able to offer, speeds that no one ever envisioned. I guess the key point is this spectrum is quite costly, and certainly it can offer value propositions you can offer your customer, but you have to ensure you're monetizing the spectrum. So I think the pace of which we're moving, that coupled with the network sharing agreement, ensures that we continue to utilize our spectrum to be a network leader, which we have. To utilize the network sharing agreement we have with TELUS, which affords us a considerable CapEx advantage in that line of the business. But, I think you have to be careful that you don't try to utilize it or get too far ahead of yourself, that ultimately you're giving away the value of that very costly spectrum without monetizing it, and it's all about pace.
Just a reminder, if anyone has a question, you can just hit the button on your microphone and I'll get over to you. Please.
Yeah, it's always easier to manage the business when you have one of your competitors, shedding share or subscribers. If they're able to stabilize their business like they did in the third quarter in terms of net adds, how does that cause you to think differently about what you optimize for? Is it more for subscriber growth? Is it more for margin? Just any color in terms of how you think about it if that's actually a longer-term trend.
Well, I think what you've seen from us, as I mentioned earlier, has been quite a wireless performance where we're really firing on all cylinders. I think as you start to see other competitors back in the game, I guess as you referred to it, you'll move to more of a third potentially in the market share. And maybe during that time, we won't have the luxury to grow ARPU quite at the 6.1% pace we did this quarter. I mean, we've been able to do that, but it's been closing a material ARPU gap that existed between us and our competitors, and we've fully closed that gap, and matter of fact, have passed in some of that ARPU. So when I think about it, really look at it as continue to get our fair share of the net adds and grow, and if that's a third, that's still an incredibly healthy growth profile in our country. Do so by ensuring that you get a disproportionate share of the EBITDA of the industry, which is profitable growth, not growth at all costs. And then ultimately, I think once you see that gap of ARPU closed, as I had mentioned, maybe the ARPU growth, as I said, it's certainly not going to continue at 6% each quarter.
Thank you.
Can you give us an update on the regulatory developments, in the latter part of last year, whether it's on the wholesale mobile side or the wholesale of fiber and fixed services, and just give us a sense of what's happening, what you expect is the outcome of those decisions?
Yeah, well, there's certainly no development, I guess is the best way to put it. There's nothing really to comment on. Those are open files. I think that we're making application on the fiber decision, and that's kind of an open file, so not something I can comment on. A lot's changed in the Canadian government landscape since that time. We have a new government in place that is facing all kinds of challenges as a new government with the events going on globally, and I don't think telecom policy, to be quite frank with you, has been on the top of the new government's agenda list. Will it one day be something they turn their attention to? Absolutely. We're excited to get in and have discussions. explain to the government how BC sees things, the infrastructure investments we're making in our country, and how important they are to the country and ultimately to helping create a connected Canada. So all in all, not much else I can comment on that, but we are excited to continue to open different dialogue with the government in place.
And just, you know, by way of reference, can you explain what the implications of the current decision from the regulators was on fiber? So, you know, if nothing changed, what would be the implication for BCE?
Well, the implication could be that upon the construction and completion of a fiber to the home network, that it would be, we would have to give open access to our competitors or to wholesalers. The decision and how that would work is there's very little understanding of that. For example, if we bring a network into a neighborhood, who's responsible on building the drop from the pole to the home? Are we responsible for delivering of that? That's not known at this point of what the intention was of the decision, but obviously it would be opening the network in its infancy to having others ride on that network. And that's challenging when all of our business models are built on getting an adequate return. And should that return be challenged, then it certainly forces one to question whether or not you can go into all of the communities we once envisioned bringing fiber to.
And what are you seeing in the business and enterprise category for the company in terms of performance, and how does that look going into the next year, or this year really?
The enterprise space has been, frankly, a bit of a struggle. It's been a challenge, and it's not that we're losing share. We're getting our fair share. Matter of fact, we're getting more than our fair share. I think we're doing very well. The challenge is that the enterprise space is really driven by job growth in our country. And if you're not seeing job growth in Canada, then what you're actually seeing is large enterprise customers reducing their staff, challenging their telecom and their data spend. If there's a 1,000 XYZ corporation lets 1,000 people go, in all likelihood, it could mean 1,000 lines are being reduced. They don't need the same telephony or telecom lines into their building. So until we see sustainable job growth in Canada and, you know, GDP probably north of 3%, I think that's a segment of our business that's been a bit of a challenge for us. The team has done remarkable. They're winning the RFPs, but they're winning them out of aggressive repricing, which is what we're, you know, that's the way the environment is operating right now in that sector. So, you know, that speaks to, you know, how proud and excited we are about our wireline business in totality. When you look at the wireline growth we're getting, you mentioned five consecutive quarters of positive EBITDA that we've enjoyed in the wireline business, and albeit low single digits, if you peel the onion a little bit, you realize that inherent in that is one sector with our large enterprise customers that is declining. So it speaks to how well our other areas of the business are performing.
Yeah, maybe further on the enterprise, most of the telcos in Canada have recently bought data center assets or cloud type assets, and yourselves included, and you recently had an entrant from a wholesale focused enterprise provider coming up from the US. It doesn't seem like there's a well-developed type of business that type of business is in the wholesale side. Maybe you can blend those two things, the data center business and the wholesale business, where you think those competitive pressures are now coming in, and are those real big growth opportunities, or is it more of a global business, do you think?
Well, as you know, we have a sizable presence in the data center business, and we have it on assets that we hold directly inside of BC, but we also have it in an equity investment we hold in Q9, which is a large data center supplier in Canada, and we have a sizable position with that organization. But that's been it's been a tough business, the data center business. There's a lot of capacity, and when there's a lot of capacity, unfortunately, you see sometimes aggressive pricing in order to win RFPs, which is challenging to say the least. We think it's critical and important for us to remain in the data center business. Ultimately, it rides on our network, and that capacity will get consumed, and I think we'll see a healthier business there. As far as wholesale and wholesalers entering into Canada, I mean, there's one advantage that we do have is that we do have the broadest network in the country, and even when new entrants are coming in, we end up, in many regards, getting a big piece of revenue as they have to operate on our network somewhere in the country, and we enjoy the wholesale revenues. And as you know, with wholesale, sometimes the margin on those are healthier than retail when they're that aggressive on pricing.
So maybe just to wrap up, you know, as you think then about your opportunities for growth in mobile, what you're working through on the you know, residential and the enterprise business, what kind of position does that put you in to grow, you know, top line and bottom line? You know, maybe if you think about that over a 1 to 3 year period of time.
Well, I think one thing you've come to expect from BCE is it's not an organization that surprises a lot. We take great pride in the fact that we deliver on exactly what we state we're going to deliver on, and don't surprise our stakeholders, our investors, other than maybe doing a little bit of equity, surprised a few. But I think the growth you've seen from BCE in the last number of years is indicative of the type of growth that, you know, we're going to see for the future. With an asset base as big as ours, $21 billion in revenue, you're not going to see, you know, high single-digit growth in that portfolio, and nobody expects that. But continuing to eke out single-digit revenue growth, EBITDA growth, free cash flow growth, allowing ourselves healthy EPS growth, all fuels that ability to fund a dividend, as you've seen in the last number of years, and I think that's our focus. Future looks bright. I can't overstate how important it was to see the turnaround in our wireline business to positive EBITDA for 5 quarters, and we don't expect a surprise in the coming quarters on that either. It's been tremendous, and that is so important for us to be able to turn around that piece of our business. I mentioned earlier how impressed I am with the leadership team and what they're doing on the media side, and ensuring that that business is a contributor. And then finally, the performance of our wireless business speaks for itself. So you keep firing with those three lines of businesses the way we are, and I think we'll be able to meet our shareholders' expectations for sure into the future.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us today and sharing your insights with us. Thanks very much.
Michael, the pleasure's mine. Thanks.